This is the Project Management Podcast. We bring project management topics to beginners and experts. Find us on the web at www.thepmpodcast.com or send your emails to pmpodcast@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to episode number 101, Overtime. I am Cornelius Fichtner. This is the Project Management Podcast for the 2nd of August 2008. Nice to have you with us. I'm very happy to present another Overtime episode to you. Overtime means that once we are done with our guest on the regularly scheduled interview, we keep our microphones open and we continue to talk. Our Overtime episodes are normally reserved for the paying subscribers of the premium Project Management Podcast. Today, however, in order to give everyone an idea of what it is that you get by subscribing to the premium feed, we are making this Overtime episode here available to everyone. So far, we have produced pretty much one Overtime episode for every free episode available since episode 70, I believe. That means that you will get twice as many Project Management Podcast episodes for just a small monthly fee. Let me also quickly say that I am going on vacation. I'm going to my home country of Switzerland from August 11th to August 22nd. So during that time, there will be no new episodes of the podcast. Today's Overtime is with Jeff Burkle. He and his team from Metafuse implement their project management software across the USA for their customers. In our interview, we are taking a step back and we are looking at one of these implementations from a procedural point of view. We learn about the problems that their customers had and how, step by step, Jeff and his team helped them to improve their project management processes and also improve their overall approach to project management in the company. Oh, and yes, Jeff Burkle does indeed work for Metafuse, who happens to be an occasional sponsor of the podcast. I want to make it absolutely clear that I have asked Jeff to come on as a guest onto the program and that our interview is not a paid episode. And now, let's get going with the interview. Hello, Jeff, and welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Cornelius. It's great to be back.
What we want to do is we want to look a little bit more in depth into one of the implementations that you and your team did at your customer's site. So let's start out with the customer that we're going to look at. Tell me more about them. What is it that they do?
This customer is a large interactive agency that caters to Fortune, say, 2000 companies, and they do a lot of their interactive projects for them, such as their websites, promotional things on their websites. They do interactive discs. They do advertising. They do internet advertising, email campaigns, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And if I understand correctly, each customer is a project in itself, right?
Well, there's actually each customer can have multiple projects going on. So you might have 10, 15 projects for a particular customer going on at any one time at this company.
Okay. And what was the problem of your customer with their project management methodology? Why did they bring you in?
Well, they were very disjointed. They used desktop software. They used it in different manners. Some didn't use desktop software, or they used desktop software like Microsoft Excel or Outlook. They had a very significant resource planning and allocation problem where they really had a lot of people, as they say, sitting on the bench when they could be productive and billable. And what they wanted is a way to tie all of the functions of the organization together and provide methodologies in order to quote their customers better on the front end and implement better on the back end.
Mm-hmm. So what was the first thing that you did, you and your team, when you got to your customer? What did you do?
Well, the first thing we did before we actually sat down with any of the team members was talk to management.
Mm-hmm.
Management at this customer put a lead person in charge of this project, and we sat down with him and the principals of the company and senior executives, and made sure that everyone on that team was bought into the process and bought into what we were doing and what the results were going to be before we went one step further.
Okay. And was that simply a top-down directive from management in regards to we're going to do this, or was there consensus building, or how did they actually get the buy-in?
Well, from a management standpoint, some of it was indeed top-down, but a lot of it was coming up. So management was not so much saying this is what we're doing and doing a top-down force. It was more of that they were sponsoring what was being told to them by their team. The management at this company is very flexible and very open to what is going on in their organization. So they were hearing the pains. They understood what that meant, and they brought us in to help solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. Did they clearly define the problem for you? Or were you asked to, you know, go forth, do a discovery phase, figure out what the real problem is, and then come back to us and tell us what we need to do?
Well, it was kind of a two-step process. From a 30,000-foot view, they did understand the problem. Mm-hmm. They knew what the general direction of where they wanted to go and where they wanted to end up. But as far as all of the specifics of what to do in each area, that was more of the what they actually engaged us to do, which is go through and find out how to tie all these disparate systems together into one cohesive process or set of processes, really, that the company could use to achieve its strategic goals.
We've already mentioned that you got the buy-in at the top level. Now, you're obviously going out to people. You're meeting project managers, account managers out in the field from your customer. How much pushback did you get from them?
Well, there's always pushback. There is, surprisingly, there was some pushback in the project management area of the company as well. And no one likes to really do change, especially if they think what they're doing is working. So adoption is a very important part of any of these processes. And the way that we overcame this was to create what we called a KIP group, which was a representational group, kind of like the House of Representatives or the Senate, where everyone in the company had representation on the project team. So they didn't all have duties on the project team, but they had this representation position where they could provide feedback. They had to sign off on any of the recommendations that were being proposed. So they all had a say in what was going to happen and how it was going to happen. So this was very important in order to kind of overcome any of the pushback that we would get. Out of that team, there's a subset that we called super users, and that was the team that we actually worked with on a day-to-day basis to develop the processes and make adjustments and then provide the recommendations back to the team.
Mm-hmm. I think at this point, it's probably a good idea to look at a few numbers quickly here. What is the size in terms of employees of this particular customer?
This customer at that time was about 350 employees.
Okay. How large was the KIP group?
The KIP group was about 20.
20 people. And how many people were in your super user group?
Probably about eight.
Probably about eight. Okay. And how large then was the team at your end?
Our team was four people.
Four people. Project managers solely or technical people? How did you do that?
No, I was the lead on this, and my background is more in the business process end of things. Mm-hmm. Then we had a certified PMP, actually two of them. One who was the lead PMP who did most of the project processes, has an Accenture background and has been doing project management training for us for quite a number of years. And then we had support, which was technical support, where we would meld not only the business process and the people, but how we were going to implement Project Insight to accommodate those things.
It sounds like a lot of the work that was then probably physically done was done by the super users themselves. Is that correct?
That is correct. There was a lot of homework given.
Yeah.
We would meet with them at least monthly, but typically, even if we didn't meet face-to-face every week, there were telephone conversations every week. And there was, out of each of the planning meetings, there was a set of homework that kind of came out, both for us and for the super user group. And a lot of the super users had a lot of homework, and they were up to the task. They performed admirably, and they were a huge factor in the success of this project.
As you went into this project, did you have a roadmap in mind from your company's point of view of how you were going to do this project, drive this project, where you were going to go? Or was it more something that was fluid and you adjusted as the project moved forward?
Well, it was kind of both. I mean, we went in with a specific process that we were going to follow in order to have this happen. First was getting buy-in from management. Second was forming the group that represented all of the areas of the company. Third was to get the super user group together. Fourth was to assess where they were at that time. So we interviewed lots of people, found out what processes were in place, where there were no processes, and kind of got that all together. The second thing we did from there is that we then went one level lower. And from that, we found out what really went on. So the PMs and the management and the mid-level folks, this is how we do things. This is how, and then you interview the people doing the work. No, that's not really how we do it. This is what we really do.
Yeah, you hear that all over the time.
Exactly. And one of the areas that we did focus on a lot was on the resource allocation, because what we found was the bench problem was actually a little bit larger than even they realized it was. So we did a lot of work on making sure that we had processes in place to handle the resource allocation and resource shuffling.
Okay. So we've got the buy-in from the management. We're obviously getting the buy-in from the lower level people as well. We're now analyzing what we have. We're doing a gap analysis, and we're defining our new processes. And in the end, there has to be some sort of a product that is output. That was it to simply documentation of these processes and then implementing these processes? What was the final result that the customer is now using?
Well, there are three things. One, there was a set of documentation, a pretty comprehensive set of documentation that came out. It not only documented the processes for planning, executing, controlling, and closing out projects, but it also addressed a lot of the business processes operationally that would go into the day-to-day workings of the company within these other processes. So that documentation did come out, and that documentation is being used. Well, it's now been improved upon since then. So that was one thing that came out of it. Second thing is that we implemented the project management tool, Project Insight, which is our product. And that is the mechanism where they track and plan and measure how their projects are actually performing. That gives management the tools that they need. It gives finance the tools that they need in order to measure how things are going. It gives resource allocation and staffing coordinators the information that they need in order to keep people busy and billable. The other thing that came out of it was a set of training. And implementation was not just put the product in, put the processes in, but we also went through quite a bit of training the users on how to use the processes, how to use the product, and how to be successful with that. And then we did a follow-up where we didn't just give them the documentation, train them, and then say, good luck. We actually sat out there for quite a lot of days in order to help them post-implementation, because no matter how much you think you're going to think of everything that might come up, you don't. And what we did was we provided that help so that they weren't overwhelmed, that they had experts on hand that they could come to, talk directly to, And depending on what the particular needs of the customer, depending on who we sent out in order to do that. So we help them evolve from the point of, yeah, we've got nothing, to we've got a set of documentation and people got trained, to now we're melding that into our day-to-day lives. And we're finding out where we might have a gap still, fixing that. We might have something that didn't quite work, and we fix that. We find out what we're doing really well and try to repeat those and try to get it from the point of, hey, this is a new thing that I have to learn, to this is the way I really work. And this is what's, you know, to use the buzzword of the month, the DNA of what's going on in the company. This is how we do things.
Right. You mentioned the improvements that have already been put in place into the documentation of the processes. How did you instill a culture of continuous improvement in the company? Because obviously they didn't have that before. Now they suddenly have these documents, which probably to many people look like, wow, huge piece of paper that I suddenly have to follow. Then they use them. They realize, hey, they're good, but you know, in half a year, it's stale because it changes. What mechanisms did you put in place to ensure that they continuously update these processes?
Well, they have a review process. Mm-hmm. And that review process, a big part of that review process is what they call the project sunset or closeout meetings. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get your lessons learned. And that's where you know, okay, this does work, this doesn't work. And that's where you get a lot of good information on how to update the processes. It's up to them to update their processes. And we held their hand on that for a little while too, but they're really running with that. It's part of how they measure people, not necessarily in how many new improvements that you have, but are you following the processes? Are you doing what you're supposed to do? And then naturally, as it becomes part of who they are and what they do, you just innately want to make that better. So you'll have project managers saying, hey, I think we can do this, or I can do that, and that might help this. Or, hey, you know, and on this type of project, we do this a little bit differently, so can we adjust our process in order to handle that? And the folks do come forward and provide that that feedback, and where it makes sense, we make adjustments.
In hindsight, what was the most difficult part of this engagement for you and your team?
Well, I think the implementation is always pretty difficult on anything. I mean, it's all relative, but when you've got 350 people that are used to doing things basically the way they feel like doing it, and now they have to do it the way that you're telling them to do it, there's going to be lots of people who just kind of sit there and grumble. So that's why we made sure that we were available for the organization. The organization itself designated a team of people that was always available. They set up an area where people could email suggestions and questions, and then they had open door times where they could come in and ask those questions or discuss something that might be hard to convey over email. So they put in processes and other mechanisms to kind of help that adoption. Of course, you know, you've got the holdouts that, you know, won't do it because they don't want to. But as they went through, they got really creative, since they're a creative organization, on naming the top 10 reasons why you might do, you know, follow the process. They named the application. They had a contest to name Project Insight something else. And they came up with all kinds of ways, creative ways to make it fun and exciting. And that helped the adoption as well.
Interesting. One thing that we haven't mentioned yet is the fact that this particular customer has offices throughout the United States. They're not just in one location. Did you and your team only deal with one location and they just then propagated that out? Or did you work with various locations at the same time?
Yeah, we work with all of the locations. The super user team was mainly at their main location, but members of the representative team had a representative from each office. And during the implementation phase, we implemented it everywhere at the same time. And people had the same say in the process, whether you were in New York or Philadelphia or wherever you were. So we did not do a, we're going to do Maine, and then we're, you know, we're just going to fire it out there to everybody else and, you know, sink or swim. It was a very collaborative process, and when we went live with it, they got trained. Every city got trained at the same time.
Was there anything in particular that surprised you during this engagement? Something that you thought, oh, I wouldn't have expected that?
Well, I think one of the things that was a pleasant surprise was during the training sessions. Before every training session, a member of the senior management team came in to that training session, and they gave a little pep talk. And this pep talk was focused around profits and why we're doing this. So it started out, why are profits important? And it got feedback about all kinds of things. And they basically showed quantitatively that, hey, if we do a little bit and this process and these things that we're doing and then we're training you on are those little things, we can substantially increase not only our profitability, but our ability to grow the company. And that was a pleasant surprise, because not only did management buy into it at the beginning, they bought into it at the end and during the implementation stage. And that was very important. And everyone went out there saying, yeah, you know, this isn't just something that the management is throwing down on us and saying, do it or else. It's, hey, this is a reason why we're doing this. We're doing this as a team, and we're doing this in order to better the company. Now, from that point on, from that implementation point to now, they've almost doubled in their size.
Wow. One thing that I saw, I got the success story about this this customer in front of me, and one thing that I saw in it was that management found that if all of their employees just don't bill 15 minutes every single day, remember they are customer-centric, so everything that they do is for their internal their external customers. So if they do not bill 15 minutes of their daily work time to a customer, they may lose up to, what was it, $2 million, I believe. Incredible figure if you look at it from just 15 minutes every person every day.
Amazing. That's right. I mean, it's the little things that mean a lot. And that is true. And that number is significantly different now, because one, they are capturing all of those billable hours. They're pricing their projects out better up front. For instance, they might have said, okay, in this particular project, we should bill X amount of dollars for a particular phase of this project. And they might find that, hey, you know, we're losing money on every single one of those. And competitively, we can actually price this where it needs to be priced. So they augment their revenue by being able to do that. And by capturing all of the billable hours, not only do they know how effective their employees are, they also don't leave any of that revenue sitting on the table, which helps that profitability number.
Amazing what the improvement of your processes in a company like this can do. Fabulous. Let's finish up with your recommendation to project managers and also PM consultants out there. Where would you say they should put most of their focus in process improvement projects like this one?
Well, I would say, first and foremost, you have to have that management buy-in. I know I've said that a number of times, but that really is the key, because if you don't have that, it doesn't matter what you do. It's not going to work. Second is really, you know, make sure that you're honest with your customers and the PMs out there. You need to be honest with what really is going on in your company. You know, don't look at what is supposed to happen or what you think is happening. Really find out what is happening, because that's, you know, you're going to have your eyes opened a lot, and you're going to find out what really works and what really doesn't, and that's going to be a basis for you to actually move forward in the process.
Excellent. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Cornelius.
And that was our Overtime with Jeff Burkle. That's it for today. Thank you very much for listening. As always, you can find us on the web at thepmpodcast.com. And if you are a PMP who wants to become PMP certified, you can visit pmprepcast.com. In our sister podcast, we teach you concepts, tools, and techniques that you need to know in order to pass the PMP exam. Please send your emails to pmpodcast@gmail.com, and when you write, please tell me where in the world you are writing from. And finally, we have this. In order to be successful on all your projects, you must apply the following technique. Look around in your company and find those projects that will most likely succeed. When you see one, you must immediately shout, "That's mine!" And for all the rest of the projects, you must duck down and shout, "That's yours!" Until next time.